Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 42. And it felt like maybe the Steelers needed 42 on Sunday, Dave, and maybe they'll be able to put up 42 this Sunday as they take on the Cleveland Browns. We'll have Scott Petrak join us, a beat writer who covers the Browns. He'll join us in about 30 minutes to give us the latest and greatest on what's going on with the Cleveland team that maybe appears, at least this is the argument that I've been throwing out there for the first time in a while, appears like they're headed in the right direction, but obviously nothing to show for it in the standings as they come in 0-10 to this game. And I don't know, Dave, I don't know if that makes them a wounded team dying for their first win. I don't know that they'll be any more desperate than a Steeler team that's lost four in a row. And it was an interesting press conference, but of course, the most important news that we got was, I guess, not unexpected. I mean, I didn't know this after the game, but I certainly got a pretty good sense of it on Monday night that Cam Hayward had a relatively serious injury, and so I didn't know that it's been said, but the torn pectoral muscle and out for the season.
Yeah, and you know, if you watch some of the video on Steelers.com after the game, you saw him have that wrap on, and of course he left the game. Not for many snaps, you know, against the Cowboys on Sunday, but, you know, he was able to finish just the same, even though he had, you know, now that we know that he did suffer a torn pectoral muscle during it. And, you know, the word started to build, I think, you know, into Monday morning or later Monday afternoon into Tuesday morning that, hey, you know, this might be serious here. And I think Ron Cook posted on Twitter that look for Mike Tomlin to deliver the bad news on Cameron Hayward during his Tuesday press conference. And that's exactly what happened. And then not long, even though Mike Tomlin said during the press conference Hayward was being reevaluated, it wasn't too long after that press conference ended that Hayward took to social media account to say, look, my season is over. And what a huge, huge blow because, you know, Hayward, as we all know, had already missed a couple of weeks due to the hamstring injury. The Steelers' run defense took a dive during those two games that he was out. They finally got him back on the field with Ryan Shazier and Robert Gold and some of these other guys. And you know, they did a decent job of containing Ezekiel Elliott in the first half of that game on the ground. That is obviously the pass for 83 yards they didn't contain, but you know, and then the second half it was a totally different animal when you talk about the defense. And it's devastating news. He's a tough guy. You're not going to replace him. You're just going to have to try to work in a couple of your guys like Ricardo Matthews and Javon Hargrave and, you know, just do the best you can. But it is a huge blow to a defense that really, of all people, you know, two people they probably couldn't afford to lose on that defense. That's Cameron Hayward and Ryan Shazier, and they've now lost one of them.
Yeah, Dave, it's just surprising to me that Ricardo Matthews hasn't played. Anyway, basically, hasn't played at all. And you know, we go back to the post end of year press conference last year talking about the defensive ends and being on the field all the time, and Mike saying, you know, until he gets something better, basically, or until he gets something adequate to put out there, those guys were going to play all the snaps. And I think Tua played every snap, and as you pointed out, Hayward played most of them. So it's going to be, they're going to have to figure out by committee. And I don't think Cam has been this year the Cam Hayward we've seen. He's had two really good games against Kansas City and against the Jets, but he hasn't had more than two tackles in any of the other games he's played this season. So you can speculate. He started the season with an injury. He's been injured the past couple weeks. We'll see. I mean, obviously the games he missed, the Steelers' run defense was awful, but I don't think that was just because of Cam Hayward. So you know, just another, you know, another brick in the wall, if you will, for what's been going wrong for the Steelers this year. And I had thought, and I mentioned it many times in this podcast in the preseason, that they had addressed their defensive line depth and drafting Hargrave and signing Ricardo Matthews. That would be a big upgrade. Well, now we're going to find out for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the snaps come, you know, entering week 11, Stephon Tuitt, 541, Cameron Hayward, 364, Javon Hargrave, 235, Ricardo Matthews, just 130 snaps, Daniel McCullers, 77, LT Walton, 24. Now, LT Walton will obviously start dressing for every game now, so we're going to get a good longer look than what we've already had at LT Walton. The thing is now, David, is, you know, you already lost Hayward. Can you continue to run Stephon Tuitt out there for 90, 95% of the plays? Yes, I understand he's still pretty much a baby, relatively speaking. But, you know, we come out of the – and we talked about this last week, the comments Hayward made at the end of last season that, you know, they have to do things to try to get those guys off the field, get them, you know, some few breathers. At most, maybe make them play, you know, 80 to 85% of the snaps, you know, a game. It doesn't look like they're going to be able to do that now with Tuitt, and we'll find out what Walton and Ricardo Matthews can give on that right side, and just, you know, hopefully they're going to have to play a lot of nickel or sub package in this game due to the Browns being down. So if that's the case, then you can obviously rotate a lot of guys on the opposite side of Tuitt there in this game. But they just need more depth, I think, more quality depth on this defensive line right now.
Okay, so Dave, let's get into the press conference, and you know, the injury situation is you know, Hayward's obviously the big news. We'll see where guys go kind of week to week. Stevie Johnson's season is going to be over. LJ Fort back, Stevie Johnson on the IR now. We'll see if what happens. It didn't sound good for – I got to say, it didn't sound good for Marcus Wheaton. And it's not good for Darius Heyward-Bey here in the short term. So I don't know if they'll make a move at the receiver position. Accountability, discipline, those were the words buzzing out of the locker room on Sunday morning. And post-game, after the loss, you know, Ben talked on his radio show yesterday. Mike, I asked him specifically about that. I asked him about coaching better. What was your takeaway from how Mike handled the press conference and handled, you know, people look, Mike uses a lot of buzzwords. Mike speaks in interesting language is how I'd use it. I find it somewhat entertaining. I don't think he beats around the bush, but he hit on accountability and transparency and watch the film. We're not looking to you know, say flowery words and make people feel good. We're going to watch the film and we got to do things better. And the popcorn's causing problems because it's not running rampant, what he said. We're not making a ton of mistakes, but we're making enough mistakes and crucial mistakes that it's killing us. I actually liked the press conference. I thought he handled it well. What were your thoughts?
Outside of wanting to go pop some popcorn, I thought, you know, I was thinking about this, David, and the word when that you hear from the players quite a bit when they describe Mike Tomlin is how even keel he is. Now, sans the post game press conference the other evening against after the loss to Dallas. Mike sounded in that press conference, not even kill. It sounded like somebody ripped his heart out of his chest. And you don't really normally hear Mike Tomlin that down, you know, in the dumps as you did post-game against the Cowboys. But Mike Tomlin bounced back, if you want to call it that, and I thought he was very even kill. He used the word transparent several times. Now, is he transparent when it comes to other things, or was this, I'm going to be transparent because we've lost all these games in a row, you know? I thought he did handle the questions well, you know, the transparent, the accountability, everything that goes along with the play call, even, you know, on those runs late in the game. I thought he handled it well, but you know, I thought he handled the coaching question well about, it's an ever-changing, you know, position that you just don't walk into stadiums and your resume wins you football games. It's not like it's not like we all didn't know that, but I thought he handled it well. And now the question becomes, okay, he handled that well. You know, what are they going to do this Sunday against a winless Browns team? That, look, we need to see a complete performance on both sides of the football, not just, hey, this is the offense, they did their job and the defense just tagged along, or the defense held Cleveland to 16, 17 points and, you know, the offense took advantage of the short field and the Steelers won 19-16 or something like that. This is a key opportunity to make a statement that said, look, we've lost another one of our players, our defensive leader. We've had these issues. We went out there and we just annihilated a team that most people expected us to do way before the start of the regular season.
Yeah, and so if you're – one of the things, Dave, that about the whole conversation that – you know, Monday was rough dealing with, you know, Steeler fans who want to fire the whole coaching staff and, you know, the typical stuff you get. And it's a four-game losing streak. We're not used to seeing this. They had one to start the season the year they went to London and lost the fourth game to the Vikings. And I'm trying to remember when the last one – I don't know that – has Mike Tomlin had a five-game losing streak? I guess he did in 2007 maybe or I know he's had a five-game losing streak, and maybe it was 2011. When they finished 9-7 and just missed making the playoffs. I'll try and pull that up exactly when it was. But one of the things you can't do in the middle of a season, and when we get to Scott talking about the Browns, I'm sure he'll get into this as well, is you can only do so many things personnel-wise. You have a roster. There's not a lot – there's not a trade market to go do things. Guys who are street free agents are street free agents – in a league where you've got 60 guys on a team and you got 32 teams, so you've got over 3,000 people employed, so they're not the best players around. You're not just going to pick somebody off the street to replace Cam Hayward. So you've got to deal with what you have. And I do like the way they've worked in the young guys on defense in terms of Artie Burns and Sean Davis, and we'll see more of that. I think the receiver position is maybe the most interesting, and the accountability issue at wide receiver. We saw them, you know, use whatever word you want, but for all intents and purposes, they benched Eli Rogers against New England, and he hasn't played a lot, and now he's got a role back. Sammy Coates has been benched for, you know, 3 weeks, and again, this is, you know, I asked Mike specifically about it. Two plays, and you guys, I think, charted it, 68 for Colby Hamilton. 68 versus 2 for a guy who had 400 and some yards receiving through the first five games, on pace for a 1,000-yard year. He's got 4 yards receiving since the Jets game. He has one catch, and that came from Landry Jones. He and Ben are 0 for 10 in targets since then. This is it. They don't have a second receiver. It's unbelievable that this offense that we talk so much about doesn't have a second receiver right now.
Yeah, and they're probably hoping Ladarius Green can be that second receiver right now at this point. Yeah, David, you were talking about five-game losing streaks. How can you forget about we're going to unleash hell in 2009? That was the
2009. I was trying to remember what year. Yeah, and then they won their last three and almost got in.
Yeah, well, remember though how they broke that streak against the Green Bay Packers, having to come down. Remember all the
37.
37-36, that one when Mike Wallace catches that pass, you know, late in that one in the end zone on that drive there. But they were very close to having a six-game winning streak. And the thing is people
losing streak
coming out of that halfway through that losing streak after the game against the Baltimore Ravens was when Mike Tomlin delivered that we're going to unleash hell there at the beginning you know, we're going to unleash hell in December, then proceeded to go out and lose the next two games to the Oakland Raiders at home, I believe, and then Cleveland Browns on the road 13-6, and then finally righted a ship in that game against the Green Bay Packers. And as you stated, they closed out, you know, they went on to win their final two games that year and finish up with a 9-7 record. But back to Sammy Coates. You know, this has been kind of confusing for me as well too. Now Mike Tomlin, you know, kind of cleared the air on Tuesday saying that multiple fingers he's dealing with. Now, when did this multiple fingers crop up? Or
I think it's all the same thing from the Jets game when he got the gash. He got the broken. We knew he had a broken finger. The cut, and you know. I think it's all resulted from the same.
That. Okay, and assuming that is indeed the case, and that multiple happened in week five against the Jets, you know, he's played a high amount of snaps in games since then. You go back to the game against the Ravens, right? I mean, he played a large amount of snaps in that game most recently, and then you're going to turn around the following week against the Cowboys, and he plays two, but he still plays 18 total special team snaps. I mean, you know, Mike went out of his way to say that, hey, these busted fingers aren't messing up his play on special teams. You know, I mean, is it legitimate? He just can't catch and squeeze the football because of these fingers. But these fingers are enough to let him hand fight and all that other good stuff that goes along with with covering kicks and stuff. I don't know, but whatever it is, this team needs Sammy Coates back in a hurry as a deep threat, because I don't know if you saw the stat that I put up the other day that since that Week 5 game, Ben attempting to connect down either the right or the left side on balls thrown more than 15 yards, it's something like four of 16 or something like that. His four completions on deep passes down either the right or left hand side, two have gone to AB, and the other two have gone to Kobe Hamilton. I mean, they need that deep threat back to help stretch the field, and it'll be interesting to see now how much Sammy Coates plays against the Browns, being as how Mike Tomlin has now set us up for pretty much Sammy to, you know, play just a handful of snaps again.
This is going to sound crazy. Is it possible that Kobe Hamilton has surpassed Sammy Coates on the depth chart?
Man, it certainly. I mean, he's made some combative catches, hasn't he?
They only threw to him twice in that game, and he made a really good catch on that 39-yarder. And you know what? I will say this, and Mike said this too, and I'm going to point this out again. The Steelers receivers helped Ben out a lot on Sunday. They made some good catches. Kobe Hamilton's catch was a good catch. He also, the other time he was targeted, he drew the pass interference penalty down the field, which was a little bit of a gift for the Steelers. That ball was underthrown. It didn't come out of Ben's hand all that great. I think there were some other ones that they certainly could have called that they didn't call on pass interference. And one was, I think, also to Kobe Hamilton down that right sideline. But Kobe Hamilton's done good things when they've targeted him. I mean, he has. Look, there's no pedigree there, but the fact of the matter is it's production that matters. And, you know, it's not what any of us expected. Nobody's talking about Kobe Hamilton on September 1st. But all of a sudden, you just wonder. He's a big receiver. They like – obviously, everybody would like to have that. And maybe he doesn't have the pure blazing speed of Sammy Coates. And this is not giving up on Sammy Coates. There's room for all these guys, but the way the receiving core has developed this year or not developed this year has certainly been fascinating.
Yeah, and I think you hit on a key thing there with Kobe Hamilton, though, David. Look, I mean, props to the kid. I mean, you're talking about a former, what, six-round draft pick that wasn't even in camp when the Steelers reported to Latrobe. Injuries necessitated him being signed. He's worked his butt off and gotten himself on the roster. He's been there now for over a month, and I wrote the other day before the game that – with everything that's going on right now, if anybody's roster spot is secure, probably in these final seven games, it's him of all people. And he started to see some snaps on special teams, obviously with DHB out. But you hit on the key thing there. This guy is not blazing fast. You know, I think he ran something like a 4.56 at the combine. He's not gonna put the fear of God into secondaries as far as taking the tops off of coverage. Can he be kind of a career number four or number five guy? I am not ready to rule that out. But is this guy a guy that you can say, well, he's passed Sammy Coates on the depth chart? That's that. No, I Sammy, something's going on with Sammy that I still don't think that we know about. Is it him not picking up these routes? You know, look, you know, we talked the other day on that one deep pass that Sammy was in the game. Eli Rogers and Sammy Coates were both in the same area. Somebody was wrong there. I mean, I think that's a Captain Obvious statement. We don't know who was wrong there, but, you know, look, Ben went out of his way to praise Eli Rogers and Kobe Hamilton after that game. For whatever that is worth and what that's worth, I do not know. Sammy has made mistakes. Sammy has coasted on a few routes where the ball ultimately went his direction. There's some disconnect maybe outside of the fingers that we don't know about. Now, do I think Sammy's ever going to become much more, you know, than, let's say, a two-trick pony? Personally, no, I don't. I don't know how you feel about it. I think he's a deep type of guy that you can maybe do some...
Will he be as good at any point in his career as Mike Wallace has been in his career?
Boy, in the early stages of Mike Wallace's career, say what you will about the body catches, say what you will about only being able to run one route. He ran that damn one route well, didn't he?
Yep. I mean, Mike Wallace is an accomplished guy who got paid a lot of money. I don't know that, you know, even in today's inflated era, you know, 5 years later, that Sammy will ever get that kind of money. I'm with you. Look, Sammy Coates was a third-round pick. We knew he was green. And I think once we all saw Martavis Bryant kind of take a step forward and hope that Sammy would do the same thing. And I think, you know, at the end of last year, you had some expectations because you saw the physical skills that he had. And what we saw, let's be fair to Sammy. The first 5 weeks, what we saw was really good stuff. And if he were able to do that kind of on a consistent basis, it'd be a big deal. But yeah, I don't think we're ever going to get a route runner out of this guy. And no, I don't think he'll ever be as good as Mike Wallace has been.
Let me say this about Sammy. I think he can become a more well-rounded receiver. Boy, say that quick a few times. A more well-rounded receiver earlier in his career than Mike Wallace was. But with that said, I don't see Sammy as a 70 to 80 catch a season guy. Does that make sense? I think he'd become a decent number two. He delivered you what, five catches of 41 yards or more within the first five games. What is that? I mean, that works out to 16 of those things during a full regular season if he's healthy.
Is he going to be as good as Marcus Wheaton has been at his best?
I think the thing is, Wheaton showed flashes where you thought, okay, and then just other times where either A, he's not on the field, or B, it just looked like he was totally not on a different game plan than Ben Roethlisberger.
Absolutely.
When my biggest fear about Wheaton when he leaves is that somebody gets a hold of him and straightens him out a little bit, and then he becomes, I don't think he's going to become an Emmanuel Sanders, but can become a consistent 60 to 70 catch guy with you know, six touchdowns a season. Because I've always thought that Wheaton was a smart a smarter player than what he's shown on film, and I think he's a better – he's a decent route runner. The thing is, boy, you go back to his rookie season. He missed time. Boy, you could parallel him and Sammy Coates right now, sort of. Missed time with busted fingers during his rookie season, came back and then had not a great second season, and then we saw signs, especially in that game against Seattle last year, 200-yard receiving, type game.
Not many guys put that up in their career. Not many guys have a 200-yard receiving
game.
Yeah,
the thing is we're not going to find out what Marcus Wheaton can or can't become with him in a Steelers uniform.
No, it's not going to happen. And I would not surprise me at all if we don't see him again.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You know, he's having his shoulder looked at, and he can't kick that. And Mike Tomlin said something that keeps cropping up or something like that. And yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if he goes on IR. Look, Kobe Hamilton. There's one shot of Kobe Hamilton doing a good job of getting off the line with his release. The thing is, once he gets off that release, he's a little clunky, I think, with his feet and doesn't maximize whatever speed that he has to kind of that Sammy can do. Now, Sammy at times can struggle to get off the line, but if you give Sammy a free release, as the old saying goes, if he's even, he's leaving type of thing. It'd be nice to kind of marry these two guys together and form yourself a wide receiver, but of course you can't do that. Dave, look, I know we're kind of running a little bit low on time, and before we get to this Le'Veon Bell thing that I want to talk about, is there anything that you kind of want to wrap up from what Tomlin said on Tuesday or Ben has said or anything like that?
Well, like I said, I think it's a little concerning the way Ben has expressed his opinions and how his opinions have been expressed by the media. And so, Ben, he totally dismissed Aditi's tweet and her comments about the heart-to-heart, which, I did as well when it happened on Sunday. And she said, Ben had a talk with him. When you say a quarterback had a heart-to-heart with the head coach, it just sounds ridiculous, honestly. I thought it was ridiculous. And Ben was right on his show when he said, look, Mike and I talk every day. It's not like, we went in that day and closed the door and, sang Kumbaya. I mean, I tweeted at the time. I said, this will be the all-time pot stirrer if the Steelers lose this game. And look, Ben played well. It wasn't, obviously Ben was a positive in that game. So I thought that was ridiculous. The question of does Mike have the locker room or is the team together? I don't think that's an issue. But clearly somebody's trying to put that narrative out there. Somebody's trying to put the narrative of, this guy's now lost four in a row. And you see it on Twitter. You get it, Dave, every day. I get it every day, the fire Mike Tomlin stuff. And I think I'll just flat out say it. I think there's a racial component to it. I don't know who people – is Keith Butler's seat getting hot? You're damn right it's getting hot. It is definitely getting hot. And I don't know that if the Steelers go 7-9 and lose a couple games here down the stretch that, we perceive they shouldn't if Keith Butler gets to keep his job. From there, I wouldn't know, whether Carnell Lake or Joey Porter or Mitch or anybody else is at risk. I don't think Todd Haley's at risk. I don't think Mike's at risk. But – the conversation is loud right now about the head coach, and I'm surprised how loud it is. And I just – look, Mike's as culpable as anybody in this, but I don't know who Steeler fans think that they're going to bring in and make this thing right. Kevin Colbert's name has been brought up a lot over the past month. And all of a sudden, this is one of the things we've talked about a lot, Dave. We go back and regrade these drafts every year and we talk about them. Steelers haven't had a bad – they didn't have a bad draft from 2010 through 2014. I'm not going to evaluate 2015 and 16 yet. 2015, the two guys at the top haven't played, period. 2016, looks like it might be okay. So I get the defense hasn't performed well, but I don't think the drafts have been bad. Maybe they have to supplement. In fact, I think they're going to have to supplement in free agency this year on the defensive side. But I'm I guess it's the nature of the beast, and I do think that probably the vocal minority on Twitter gets more airspace and ear space than we should give it. But they're loud.
Yeah, when you look at these drafts, David, I think you could go league wide and you can chop all these up. The big component to drafts, in my opinion, is you better hit on your first round and your second round pick. And even if you're not able to re-sign, get these guys the second contracts, your first two round draft picks every year, these guys better be impactful players during their 4 or 5 years in town. Now,
if Jarvis Jones were Von Miller, we wouldn't be having any conversations about anything. We'd be having parties every day.
Right. Now, look, you Ryan Shazier is health related. When he's on the field, he plays good. As you mentioned, the 2015 draft class. Look, I mean, if they knew Cinquez Golson was going to have the troubles he had injury-related, they would have never drafted him. You know, unfortunately, you don't have that kind of crystal ball. And really the same thing with Bud Dupree, who really only has, you know, one full season underneath his belt right now. Le'Veon Bell, you know, missed games because of suspension. Obviously, some with injuries. That has hurt as well, too. You go back to 2012. David DeCastro has been fine. Mike Adams was a huge, huge bust. But then you go back to 2011. Cameron Hayward seems fine. Marcus Gilbert seems fine. You even go back to 2010. Marquise Pouncey and Jason World. Sure, Jason World's, you know, didn't probably turn out to be exactly the player they wish he'd be, but how nice would it be to have Jason Worlds right now, David? You know, he'd be their best pass rusher probably right now, as sad as that might sound. So, you know, I always like to judge these first two round picks, and then whatever you get after that, you kind of get. Now, can they do a better job of addressing talent depth-wise, especially when it comes to undrafted guys? Look, they've hit on a few undrafted guys as well, too, that don't often get talked about as well, too. But
Ross Cockrell, front and center on that. I mean, somebody else gave up on him. I know most people probably aren't as high on Ross Cockrell as I am, but this guy's he's a starting cornerback in the NFL, and he's not the worst corner in the NFL. So I heard somebody talking about what the Steelers have done in terms of roster management, and they wanted to define it as only the guys they've drafted. Nothing else mattered. A guy like Ross Cockrell doesn't count. Ross Cockrell sure as hell counts. I mean, this guy was on a waiver wire. Any team could have picked him up. He sat out there for 10 days on the cut from 90 to 75, and the Steelers didn't sign him until the cut to 53. They brought him in, and he's been a productive player. Scouting, that's part of the drafting scouting process. They knew who he was, and they went and got him when he was available. So you don't just say, okay, you know, great pick Antonio Brown in the sixth round, that counts, and Ross Cockrell doesn't count. They all count. Everybody on the roster counts positively or negatively. You know, Jarvis Jones, he's a negative for your first-round pick. But you got to look at the whole body of work. Right now, though, it's fair to say the guys on the defense, they've got a lot of young guys there. They better start playing better.
Yeah, and can the scouting department do a better job? Absolutely they can, I think, especially when it comes to evaluating defensive backs, I think. Defensive backs, the Steelers have been, for the most part, miserable when it comes to draft picks during the Colbert era. When they draft those kind of guys, you know, they just wash out for you know, they just wash out, plain and simple. I mean, but you do have to look at some of these undrafted guys as well, and you need to get credit, because let's face it, guys from the sixth round on, it's a crapshoot, because a lot of those, you know, there's some guys that go undrafted that people felt should have went in the sixth round, and there's guys that went on there's guys that went in the sixth round that people thought probably should have gone undrafted, you know. So look, I mean, well, hopefully, you know, I don't want to spend too much time. We have plenty of time to evaluate draft classes later, but it's killing me to kind of get to this get to this Le'Veon Bell situation in the running back position, David. As good, and we both agree, this is, look, Le'Veon Bell is a fantastic running back, and right now top one, top two, depending on how you want to rank them with Elliott and the rest of the running backs in the league. But David, how fungible is the running back position in the NFL, and is a player like that worth He's worth the money, but is he worth the money in Pittsburgh on a roster that has a franchise quarterback and a franchise wide receiver?
I think they'll franchise him. I think they'll keep him around for another year. I expect the Steelers to go in the draft outside edge rusher, defensive line, running back in the top three rounds, and wide receiver will be now up there probably with running back. Now maybe they're probably going to have to go somewhere in free agency for a change and try to find an impact player at one of those positions. It won't be running back. I doubt it'll be wide receiver. If they can find an edge rusher or defensive lineman, that would be great. But those are the four positions of need. I don't think they're going to go in the draft. You know, again, you'll get another chance with Sanquez Golson. I think they've got enough guys in the defensive backfield. We'll see if Justin Gilbert develops at all. Their O-line, they get their fourth-round pick, the kid for Hawkins from LSU. They get him back on the O-line. So to me, the needs are very specifically those four needs and you know, pound away at it. That's kind of where I think they
are.
If I promised you
that if the Steelers did not franchise Le'Veon Bell and they spent that money, quote unquote, relative.
Because D'Angelo's not coming back either. So everybody understands that. They're not going to sign him again. He's 33. He's now been dinged up. I don't see that. So you've got Toussaint, you've got Richardson, maybe, and you're going to have Carlos Williams. So you're going to have some guys, but you're not going to have the guy.
Right, right. And obviously you could draft a guy in the first three rounds that could be a pass-catching type of guy, if you will. If I promised you that I didn't give it, that if I didn't give that franchise tag, which you know is going to be exceed $12 million to Le'Veon Bell, and I promised to spend that on one big shot on a very young edge rusher, would you do it?
Yeah.
That's where I'm going with this. I would too. And look, I frame it however you want. People think I'm disrespecting Le'Veon Bell. I've said from the get-go I think Le'Veon Bell's a great back. It's amazing what he does. There's some games where it looks like he's on a joystick and pushing these buttons, or somebody else is controlling him with buttons. But I mean, look around the league at some of these top teams, David, and you know, sans Dallas, of course. But let's remember that a guy like Ezekiel Elliott's still on a rookie contract and very, very cheap. In other words, i.e., they don't have to pay him yet. But when you look around at you know, some of these other teams that are doing well this year. Let's look. New England has got a guy in LeGarrette Blount. I mean, he's just a bulldozer, right?
There's the Steelers backup. I mean, you know, he was on the Steelers roster and he wasn't the starter.
Okay, Kansas City. They've been without Jamaal Charles. They're doing just fine, right? Yep. All right, Houston. Lamar Miller, right? And a cast of a couple other guys.
Well, I mean, you just go through them all. The Raiders, the Broncos. They're not the top backs in the league are not necessarily on the best teams in the league.
So it's a fungible position if you got a quarterback and a decent line and a wide receiver, right?
Yes.
I mean that this is where I'm going with this. Now, I just if you would have asked me this 6-7 months ago, I said, man, you got to franchise Le'Veon Bell along with getting AB a new contract and you got to keep this core together, Dave. You just absolutely got to do it. You can't let either. But you know what? Seeing how this defense this year, I think the Steelers, of course, are number ones to go in there and make a huge, huge splash. Mike Mitchell would be considered a big splash of a few years ago. I think they need to make an even bigger splash. They're going to have some cap space to work with, you know, especially if they don't franchise a guy like Le'Veon Bell. Man, I'm coming around the corner now. We're thinking, you know, look, put together a committee, if you will, at the running back position, and get Antonio Brown locked up to a long term deal. You got your line in place. Maybe draft another receiver. Hope Sammy Coates comes along and spend a little bit of money on defense, because we agree Jarvis Jones is not going to be back next year. James Harrison's not going to be back next year. Does it even matter if Arthur Motes, I mean, he's under contract, obviously, but does it even matter if Arthur Motes is back next year? We know Bud Dupree and Anthony Ciccolo are going to be back next year. All right.
We'll get into this, and we should probably get to our guy, but we'll get into this and talk about it. But, you know, if people are going to talk 4-3, this will be an interesting discussion in the offseason. Because Keith Butler's job's at risk, no question, and the Steelers haven't been effective in what they've been doing. So is it time to think about transitioning? Shazier can play wherever. Look, they finally brought him off the edge a bunch of times in this game. I've been waiting for that for 3 years. I liked how they deployed him. He still overruns plays. He still, you know, makes some mistakes. And, you know, when you do that, you can get burned, and they did. So it's not perfect. But it is going to be a really interesting thing to watch. I'm with you on how you're thinking about the Bell thing. The other thing I will point out is some of the conversation, and this happens when teams lose games, okay? So all the dirty laundry starts to come out that would never be discussed otherwise. Some of this stuff is about Antonio Brown. And Antonio Brown is not a guy who is on time for meetings. Antonio Brown, I've heard some things about, you know, to get in the drug program, you got to fail lots of things. I've heard rumors about stuff like that. Antonio Brown is incredibly productive. He is a hard worker, but he is not the most prompt guy in the organization. And some of the things I think Ben said yesterday, talking about not, you know, being ready to be in the huddle, not walking across the field when the horn sounds and that kind of stuff. having thought about it more, you know, I've pointed the finger at Eli Rogers and Sammy Coates. Well, I think some of this finger pointing is now directed toward Antonio Brown. Did you, David, just before we get to the Browns, did you think anything of what did you think of him running out of bounds at the end of the game? It was senseless, right? I mean, there's no other way to say it. You don't want to completely throw the guy under the bus, but there's no point to run out of bounds. And Mike, you know, answered it the same way. He said, "Yeah, I talked to him. That's not the right thing."
Yeah, and then Antonio Brown evidently last night during his radio show said, you know, he doesn't remember having that conversation with or something to that effect, you know, not having that conversation. Look, Antonio Brown is the least of the Steelers' problems right now. If everybody had Antonio Brown on their team, I don't know. Is it right to overlook some of the things that he does? Probably not. But, boy, he sure does make plays, right? I'm not ready to go there with finger point. Has he become a diva? Yeah, they all do, right? I mean, they all become divas. I'm with you, though. He shouldn't have run out of bounds. Do anything but that. Spin around, run 20 yards the other way. At least you still, while you're on in between the white lines, at least you still have a chance of pulling out a miracle.
Yeah. All right, Scott Petrak, right? Cleveland Browns. And by the way, speaking of the Browns, the mortgage process sometimes can be more challenging than spelling Roethlisberger. And our buddy Craig Oxane can guide you through that, the daunting process of that to get your home of your dreams, even if you want to buy one in Cleveland. If you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give Craig a call, Craig Oxane. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. You can get him today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763, or email craig@blackandgoldlending.com. Or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Scott Petrak, right? Let's get to the Browns, Dave. All right, welcome back to the Terrible Podcast. And as we do every Wednesday, we're pleased to get a beat writer covering this week's opponent, and obviously Steelers head to Cleveland to take on the Browns on Sunday at 1:00, and we're pleased to be joined by Scott Petrak of the Chronicle Telegram and Medina Gazette, Northwestern grad. I love that, Scott. Appreciate taking the time to join us here on the Terrible Podcast.
Hey, sure thing,
Scott. You know, one of the things that we pay some attention to here in Pittsburgh, obviously, is the transition with Jimmy Haslam being a former Steeler owner, taking over the control of the Browns, and it's obviously been a tough run, and he has changed the front office a variety of times. And now he's got some guys that I'm impressed with in place now. DePodesta, basically Cheeky Brown. What do you think of the organization as it sits right now? And will Jimmy Haslam give these guys a little bit of time to get things straightened out?
Yeah, well, the second part of your question, that's the million-dollar unknown, you know, because Jimmy hasn't shown the patience to let anybody kind of have a run at it. You know, he's changed regimes out after 1 or 2 years, and nobody's had any success. And the new regime, led by Sashi Brown with Paul DePodesta, they put in place a long-term plan. It's not a quick fix. It's probably at least 3 years before I think they can expect real progress on the field in terms of wins and losses. So Jimmy's going to kind of have to suck it up and show patience that he's not shown before. So we may as we've seen if he can show that. And as far as if they're the right guys or not, it's just too early to tell. I believe they're smart guys. I don't think there's any question about that. But are they the right guys to make the draft picks? And that's what it's going to come down to. Can they, because they're going to have a ton of draft picks. They have 14 this year. They're going to have extras in the next couple of years. Can they use those to their best advantage? And that remains to be seen.
So Sashi Brown's a guy that people are familiar with. DePodesta's a guy, a Cleveland guy, who's been on the baseball side for a long period of time. In Pittsburgh, we kind of know who to point to. We point to Kevin Colbert and then his staff in terms of who's making the draft picks and who's doing the scouting. Right, that's always the unknown. So who is running that part of the organization?
Yeah, well, I mean, Sashi's at the top. Sashi Brown's at the top. He's executive vice president of football operations. They all have crazy long titles. And I think Paul Dest is kind of in charge of some big picture items, like how do we improve our scouting processes? And I think he oversees the analytics. He doesn't live in Cleveland. He lives in San Diego, so he's kind of back and forth. So he's in charge of projects. And then the real football guy, because neither of those guys have scouting backgrounds or right. personnel backgrounds, the real football guy, quote unquote, is Andrew Berry, who was below the GM in Indianapolis, and he came over and he's director of player personnel. So I guess he's the head scout, but at the end of the day, Sashi Brown will get the credit or the blame.
Okay, so one more for you here. Now that they've gone through this draft process one time, and as you said, I think all 14 draft picks made the roster. It's early to judge any draft, and the Steelers same process with them. But how do you judge what they did in the first year through 10 games?
Yeah, you know what? I just wrote about that today because I think a lot of times we judge prematurely, but it's felt like the right time to kind of take a look back at it. And I just don't think they've had – I don't think it's been good enough. There's not enough difference makers from the 14 picks, 12 of whom are still on the roster. Two of them are on the practice squad now. They just haven't had a big enough impact. You can look at individual guys and say, yes, quarterback Cody Kessler has exceeded expectations, but I don't see him as a long-term answer. So he's a backup, which doesn't mean it's a bad pick. It's probably a good pick in the third round, but is he going to change your franchise? No. Corey Coleman had a big game in week two, got hurt, hasn't done anything since, but shows he has a talent. So I like him. Emmanuel Ogba, he's a pass rusher. They kind of bounce between end and linebacker. He's had 3 sacks, so he shows flashes, but there just hasn't been enough. Nobody's taken over a game. Nobody's been good enough to win a game, obviously, because they're 0-10. So I would like to see more, and that's what scares me. If you're looking toward the future, these guys are going to have to get it right in the next 2 years. If they blow these extra draft picks, then the Browns are going to have to start all over again, and I just haven't seen enough to say, yeah, these guys know how to draft.
Scott, the Browns obviously didn't have Robert Griffin, you know, the third, you know, first part of the season here, and you know, he's evidently going to start practicing again. You know, we've seen Cody Kessler now, and I'm with you. I'm not, you know, he's probably going to be a decent backup in this league, but that's probably going to be it for him. Kevin Hogan, you know, it doesn't look like there's much of a future there with him either. Surely they're not pinning all their hopes in the next couple of years on Robert Griffin III. Are you fully expecting them to draft a quarterback again in the top three rounds in 2017?
Well, let me say this. I think they should. I think they, if they're drafted first, second, third, wherever they wind up drafting, I think that pick should be spent on a quarterback. I know there may be not be any lock to be that number one pick like we saw with Andrew Luck. But I think that they should. They, you know, they passed up the chance to take Carson Wentz this year by trading down out of the number two pick, and I think that was a bad move. I think the fans and the media and probably inside the organization would feel differently about the future of this team if you knew who the long-term quarterback was, but they don't. And that kind of, it always casts a shadow of the whole organization not knowing who that guy is, and they've been looking for that guy forever. So, yeah, to answer your question, I do think they'll take a quarterback high. I'm just not convinced they'll take it with their first pick. They could trade the pick again to try to stockpile even more draft picks.
When you watch the game Thursday night against the Baltimore Ravens, you know, the one thing that really stuck out to me, Scott, was, man, Joe Thomas looks mortal-like, you know? He had his struggles. I mean, obviously going against Terrell Suggs is no picnic, but he's gone against him enough during his career to know him. How much longer does Joe Thomas, have left? And you know, was that just an off game for Joe, or is there starting to be a little bit of, you know, a few cracks in that armor?
Yeah, he did struggle the other night. There's no doubt about that. But let me say this. Joe is battling a knee injury. He's got a sore knee. So he usually doesn't even practice Wednesday or Thursday. So for him to play Thursday night, I think it might have affected the short week, might have affected him more than anybody else on the roster. And I think that showed up a couple times against Terrell Suggs. But Joe's still playing at a high level. He was before the Ravens game. I expect him to bounce back from that. You know, Joe every once in a while drops, I don't have a whole lot of time left in me. I don't think this will be his last year, but I probably would say he doesn't have more than 2 years left after this one.
Yeah, that's interesting. And why is it, you would think with the way the organization's set up that they would have looked to move him just because he's such a talent and you can get something for him. I mean, he just loves being in Cleveland and didn't want to be moved, and they kind of honored that. Is that kind of how it went down?
I think that's part of it. I think teams might have been scared about when he's going to walk away and retire. The teams that were desperate for a left tackle didn't have cap space and didn't have a high enough draft pick. So I think all that worked into it. But near the top of the list is, Joe isn't looking to go anywhere. He wants to try to turn it around here for whatever reason. And I think the Browns organization realizes that, you know, they don't have a whole lot of good things going for him right now. So to keep this guy, I think it sends a good message. He's great inside the locker room. He's still playing better than anybody. They really don't have a guy who would fill in for him. And I think that worried him. So I think all those things go into the mix.
What about the Jamie Collins thing? Obviously, people are looking at it from the Patriots perspective are wondering what the heck's going on. To me, this was a huge win for Cleveland. One, they can franchise him. Two, he's obviously a talented guy. Nobody's seen enough of him in a Browns uniform to know exactly what kind of impact he's going to have. But that, you know, you talk about difference makers. You get somebody like that for what they gave up. And if they can reach a long-term deal, it's a guy to build around. Any sense kind of in the early going whether Jamie'd be amenable to a long-term deal? And what'd you think of the trade?
Yeah, you know what? When we talked to him, we've only talked to him once. He said all the right things, but he sure didn't say, yeah, I can't wait to sign a long-term deal here. But I think that the money's right. He's open to staying here. Like, that's usually the case. And I think the Browns kind of had 8 weeks to show him what the organization's like, what it's like to play for Hugh Jackson. I think they want to try to impress him and then get him to sign that extension. I like the deal a lot. I've liked him since he's been here. I thought he played really well on Thursday night. And you're right, for a roster that's desperate for playmakers on both sides of the ball, he gives you one. And all of a sudden you can start to say, okay, you pair Jamie Collins with Danny Shelton at nose tackle and Chris Kirksey at inside linebacker and Joe Hayden if he regains his form. And all of a sudden you have some pieces on defense. And a big piece. Like, he's probably the best player on defense right now. So if you get a guy like that for a conditional third-round pick and you're able to keep him, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Terrell Pryor, I mean, he looks good at wide receiver. He probably should have made that switch a couple years earlier, right? And I mean, look, he leads the Browns in reception so far this season. He's made some tremendous plays in the games that I've seen so far. But on the other side is the draft pick, Corey Coleman. Now, of course, he's battled injuries and all like that. Does it look like Corey's ready to turn that corner now?
I think so. You know, a lot of it comes down to quarterback. I mean, that's why Hugh Jackson made the switch during the Ravens game. You know, he benched Cody Kessler in favor of Josh McCown because Kessler hasn't shown the ability to push the ball down the field. And when you have guys like Terrell Pryor who can run fast and get down the field, the Corey Coleman who can get deep, then you got to throw him the ball, and you got to have a quarterback who can throw them the ball. And I think that's where some of the frustration with Cody Kessler is right now. So I think those receivers are both fine, and I think they're good. And they're going to be good, and I kind of like where the Browns are from a skill player perspective. They just don't have the trigger man. They just don't have the quarterback, and I think that's really frustrating for Hugh Jackson. And you compile that with the line has been a weakness. They've had injuries. They've had to move guys all around. And if you don't have a line, you don't have a quarterback, you know, the coach can call whatever plays he wants. They're probably not going to get executed.
I really like Danny Shelton. I think he's going to be fine in the middle of that defensive line. And as David mentioned, Jamie Collins, I think it was a good move for Cleveland to go out and get him, assuming they can get him long-term. Joe Hayden, even though Joe Hayden does struggle against Antonio Brown throughout his career. What else, where does this Browns defense need to help the most in the upcoming draft? And is it already on the roster that they just need to develop?
I don't think it is. I think they need another pass rusher. They have a couple of guys, Ogba, who I mentioned, Carl Nassib, have shown flashes, but I don't see them being the Von Miller type of pass rusher, so I think they need one of those guys that really scares the quarterback and makes the offensive coordinator change his scheme, his blocking schemes. I think you need another corner opposite Joe Hayden, and they're really hurting at safety. They lost Jordan Poyer after the nasty hit earlier in the season against Tennessee. He's done for the year. And he's not great, but at least he's stabilized it back there. And instead, they're rotating four young guys, all of whom have struggled. So I'd like to see him get a big-time safety, a pass rusher, and then I think you need another corner.
Scott, in terms of scheme, what we're going to see on Sunday, just kind of getting into the X's and O's. I mean, they've been able to occasionally run the ball effectively. Is Crowell a guy that, you would expect to see them kind of try to pound the ball a little bit? I mean, you look at the two sides of the ball, and everybody talks about it. They don't have the trigger man at quarterback, like you said, but it feels like the offensive side of the ball is the better side of the ball. What do you expect them to do Sunday in terms of kind of run-pass mix?
Well, let me ask you, I haven't studied the Steelers a ton. How are they against the run? How's their defense against the run?
Erratic.
And now that Cameron Hayward's out, it could go back the other way now.
Well, then I would think this would be a game that Hugh Jackson would try to establish the run. He's gone away from it lately. I think part of that is because other defenses have loaded the box because they're not scared of Cody Kessler. Part of it's the teams they played. You can't run against the Ravens, so I think Hugh Jackson goes into the game and says we're not even going to try to run against them. But Isaiah Crowell has had a good year. His average per carry is near the top in the league. He just isn't getting the attempts lately. And he's frustrated by that. And I think this could be a week. The weather's going to be iffy. I think this could be a week where Hugh Jackson says, you know, we're going to pound the ball on the ground with Crowell, use Duke Johnson as a change of pace, then try to take a couple shots downfield with Kessler, assuming he can throw it that far in the weather, and try to beat the Steelers that way. Because I think, you know, the Browns' best chance is to control the clock because they can't let the Steelers have the ball all day because they're going to give up 30 regardless that they have pretty much every game this year.
Yeah, and then on the defensive side of things, the Steelers, again, they have been a bad road team, really bad road team. But obviously, Ben's had great success against the Browns. I think he's 19-2 career. If you're attacking this defense, how do you attack the Browns' defense?
Well, you can attack it everywhere. You really can. They're at the bottom of the league in every category. You can run the ball against them. You can throw it. You probably stay away from Joe Hayden just because he's their best player, but they're weak on the other side. Jamar Taylor has been okay this year, but he's got a groin injury, kept him out of the Ravens game. Tremont Williams is getting older, and he's got an ankle injury. After that, it's a bunch of rookies at corner. And they've been terrible against tight ends. So Ben can pretty much drop back, do whatever he wants. He's going to have time because the pass rush has not been there. You know, the only good thing you can say about the Browns defense is usually it's okay in the first half and then falls apart in the second half. So they're desperate to try to string four quarters together. I just don't think they have the talent to do it.
Scott, has the fan base stuck with the team? I mean, you've covered these guys for a while. It's been as, you know, as rough as it could be. Things have changed for the Cavaliers. Things have changed for the Indians. Are they still there?
Yeah, the interest is still there, but I tell you what, it might be 50-50 Browns Steelers fans Sunday. People love their Browns, and this is a football town, but this is a tough time to devote a lot of interest and a lot of money in this team, especially when the Cavs and Indians are as good as they are. The Browns have been as bad as they are for so long. So, we talked to Sashi Brown the other day for the first time in months, and he said, I don't think we're in any danger of losing the fan base. And he's probably right as soon as they win again. But right now it's difficult, and I think fans are fed up. And until they start winning again or they draft a quarterback high that you can get behind, then it's going to be tough to kind of gauge the interest.
Scott, will the Browns win a game this year? And follow that up with, care to give us a prediction on what happened Sunday?
Yeah, I keep saying they're going to win just because I think statistically the probability is you win a game. It's tough to go 0-16. But I tell you what, they're feeling the pressure. From Hugh Jackson to the players, they see 0-16 on the horizon and do everything they can not to get there. And as far as Sunday, I think the Steelers score too many points and the Browns can't keep up. You know, I'd feel better about it. The Steelers were dejected. But they're only a game back in the AFC North. I think, you know, they seem more angry than dejected to me following that loss to the Cowboys. So as long as the Steelers come in and don't take the win for granted, I think they score too many points for the Browns.
Scott, great stuff, man. Appreciate the time. Look forward to this game Sunday, and maybe we'll catch up with you in a couple weeks when we get the rematch. And for the Steelers, hopefully Steeler fans are hoping that that's a meaningful game in their playoff hopes. Thanks so much for your time.
Sure, guys. Thank you, sir.
Okay, good stuff from Scott Petrak. And, yeah, you can check him out on the Chronicle Telegram and the Medina. I got to get that right, Dave. My city's suburbs of Cleveland, not
what?
The –
Wasn't there a city in some sort of child song or rhyme that goes along with Medina or something? What am I thinking of?
I think you're coming around the mountain when she comes.
I don't remember. I'll think of it as soon as this podcast ends.
All right. Well, anyway, Steelers Nation, mortgage rates currently near all-time lows. If you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or refinance, contact our buddy Craig Oxane from First Advantage Mortgage. Craig's a Pittsburgh native, a lifelong Steeler fan. He's a nationally recognized lender. He'd love to help you out. You can call him today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Or you can email him, craig@blackandgoldlending.com, or apply online. That's the easy way to do it. www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399. Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Dave, good stuff, and we'll come back and bang this around on Friday. I don't know if I remember a time where I felt like the fan base is as dejected as they are, and obviously the Hayward injury is a kind of a cherry on top of a four-game losing streak, if you will, that they've got the right anecdote with the Browns coming up on Sunday, but I don't know that everybody's thrown in the towel. But I think a lot of people yesterday with the news about Hayward awfully disappointed and, you know, maybe they threw in the towel.
Yeah, of course, we'll break this game down a little bit more on Friday before giving our picks and stuff like that. But David, I don't even want to think about what happens or what the cries and the screams will be if somehow the Steelers lose to the Browns in Cleveland on Sunday. It's just it's going to be nuts if that happens. If you think the cries for Tomlin's head now are strong, let's not even go there just yet. But we'll break this down a little bit more on during Friday's show. You can follow me as usual on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Make sure you're listening to his show every afternoon on 970 ESPN Radio as well. You can follow us on Twitter, the show on Twitter at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the show, you can do so by going to SteelersDepot.com and finding that donate button up there on the right side of the navigational bar. That'll take you to PayPal if you'd like to give a secure donation that way as well, too. David, that's all I got until Friday.
All right. We'll talk to you then. As always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.